newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gold.
Media Project is a half hour of commentary and analysis where we talk about what's going on in the news media nationally and locally and try to give our listeners some insight into ethical decision-making in newsrooms with some veteran journalists. I'm Rex Smith, formerly editor of the Times Union, now creating the Upstate American on Substack. I'm here in the WAMC studios today with Judy Patrick, the former editor of the Daily Gazette of Schenectady and vice president of the New York Press Association. You doing okay?
Yeah, here we go again.
Here we are. We've been together a long time there, Judy. And David Lombardo, Capital Press Room, a radio correspondent, formerly a guy in print as well. What's going on at the Capitol?
Not a whole heck of a lot right now, Rex, as we wait, as we're just talking about, for a final budget to be passed.
What does a reporter do in the Capitol when not a heck of a lot is going on? You just speculate about stuff, right?
Well, we speculate, and we also brought in a Nintendo 64 a couple years ago, so that helps kill the time.
That's great. You know, actually, the Capitol, the Legislative Correspondents' Room in the Capitol has a great old poker table that in my day at the Capitol, a long time ago, 30-some years ago, reporters were still there playing poker into the night.
Well, there are literally framed poker hands hanging from the walls.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the royal flushes, right?
Yes.
Is there a piano there?
There are two pianos, Judy.
Oh, yeah.
They may not still be playable, but
one is being tuned in the near future as we prepare for the annual Legislative Correspondents Association
oh,
show.
Oh, man, are you guys still doing that?
A major fundraiser for the Northeast Regional Food Bank. It brought in over $20,000 last year, and we hope that people who are interested will support the show this year. It'll be on May 19th, and we look forward to Judy cutting a check for $150 to
excellent
come support this worthy cause.
Excellent. Yeah, the cause is worthy, the music not so much. But that's
the lyrics are great. The execution of those lyrics.
That's right. That's
people don't
right.
execute my vision, as I would hope.
Are you the show chair?
I'm not the show chair, but I am the guy who writes, you know, 10 or 12 songs and has lots of anger and vitriol that I've accumulated over the last year that I hope to get out through the show. And then people usually water it down and make it too nice.
You know, what can you do about that? There's always somebody who needs to be the one who comes through and actually does that work. In my day, it was Bob Bellafiore of the AP,
okay.
Someone who actually would create a lot of songs. There were always some folks who came through, Nick Lyman, who subsequently, who worked with you at the Gazette, right?
And then went to NIMO.
To NIMO, uh-huh. And there were always some great people. So, folks, I think it is actually a great cause, the Legislative Correspondents Show. We always say that the production values are not as good as the Inner Circle Show in New York, but the clever lyrics are better. So you want to hear that.
Yeah, I mean, apples and oranges doesn't go far enough to describe their Broadway-style production and our, hey, look what these like third graders put together with some construction paper and half an hour of free time.
Well, it's good to have stuff going on in the Capitol in any case. You know, by the way, one of the things that we ought to pay attention to here as we sit in the studios of Northeast Public Radio is what's going on in the environment for public radio, which is very tough these days. The loss of federal funding is affecting a lot of the smaller stations, apparently. Examples of this all over the place. Radio Catskill in Liberty, New York, and WIOX in Roxbury have merged. So these are two community radio stations in the Catskills. And I think this is the kind of thing that we're going to see a lot more of as time goes by, as these small public radio stations that are serving their micro markets really find that they can't be sustained.
Well, we've been merging back-end operations. I work for the Syracuse PBS NPR affiliate, WCNY, out in Syracuse, Central New York. And we've been doing some collaborations with outlets out of Watertown. There's talk about doing some additional collaborations with WXXI in Rochester, and all to deal with the fact that we lost about 20% of our budget with the federal cuts last year.
This is also happening throughout the country. Last week, Rocky Mountain Public Media in Denver And the operator of KUNC in Greeley, where the University of Northern Colorado is, announced plans to merge. So this kind of thing is going on.
Well. Now, it's all well and good if you just merge the back-end operations and you collaborate and expand. But what happens all too often is what you're, instead of two voices in a community, you get one voice. You get a reduced staff because one of the reasons they consolidate and merge is they're going to save money. I love the idea of saving money on payroll. I love the idea of saving money on electricity and front office costs, but I hate the idea of saving money on the news end of the operation, and that happens all too frequently.
Not only in broadcast, of course. That's been going on in newspapers for a long time, right?
Right. It has been going on for probably 25 years.
Yeah. And we're seeing it now happening in TV in part as a result of decisions at the federal level authorizing mergers of major television operators. Whereas there has been a prohibition in federal regulation against owning television stations that could reach more than 38%, I think, of American households. Now the FCC approved Nexstar's acquisition of Tegna. And so that combined company now can reach 80% of households nationwide, 265 stations. And an example of what is the result of that is in Indianapolis, just two companies now control local TV news. There are six signals, six TV stations in Indianapolis, and now just two companies control them. So you're going to see newsroom mergers going on in commercial as well.
Do you guys get hung up on that? Because as you just pointed out, it's 39%, but it's of the television households. And that makes an assumption that people are going to TV for their news. And I think we have to think about the media landscape in a much bigger, I guess, vision. And then so to have 80% of the TV market is to have what actual tiny fraction of the overall media? Granted, people on social media aren't spending money on journalists to actually do the hard work that probably some of these people who are going to lose their jobs or already have lost their jobs have been doing. But it definitely is a question of how do we think about that media landscape and what you have own or what that part you control.
Right. Are you a television household?
I have a television, but I stream all over everything.
Right. And I think that's part of the problem is the television reports migrate to social media or they migrate to streaming services. And to survive, I think these local TV stations have to do this a bit. You know, at least in Indianapolis, there are two, and those are TV stations. There are still other forms of media. But, you know, to take back an earlier comment I made, I guess, does it do any good to have four different TV reporters covering the same press conference? Maybe there is some value in consolidating, but you would love the other three reporters who are not covering the press conference to be doing some enterprise reporting. I think that's what I'm arguing for. I take David's comment about the fact that not that many people pay attention to local TV news. I don't watch local TV news. I may get a stray clip in some other feed, but I'm not sitting down at 6 o'clock or whenever they air it, and I don't know who any of these people are anymore anyway.
I agree. I don't know who these people are who are on local TV news, but I do sometimes, like you, get a clip. And the notion of it is just you're losing size in the ecosystem of TV news. If you have four local TV stations all covering the same thing, that is bad newsroom management, I'd say, because you want to be creating content that is unique to your platform, mm-hmm. right? Or to your entity, your newsroom. So you would hope that there might be some thoughtful newsroom leadership that would create unique content. And that's the loss. If you're losing reporters who might be creating some of that enterprise reporting that can make a difference in our communities, that's where you need to see it. And so that I do think also that consolidation in television in particular means that you'll have fewer voices. We've already seen in the Capital Region, for example, that the ownership of the CBS affiliate here, WRGB, has had must carry enterprise from their ownership. That is commentary that they were told they had to air. And I think that's a problem when you're getting must carry instructions from your owners if you have so few owners. So not a good thing overall. And so what is the solution? I mean, if you're looking for an ecosystem change. We've been saying, well, nonprofit newsrooms are one way to go because there are a lot of fine nonprofit newsrooms that are springing up that we've talked about on this show a lot. But there's a new report that finds that they are generating just a fraction of what the old commercial newspaper ecosystem used to generate. Here's the number. 400 digital-first nonprofit newsrooms brought in about $700 million in revenue in 2024, which sounds great. 400 digital-first nonprofit newsrooms. But that $700 million is just 1% of the advertising and circulation revenue that was generated across the newspaper industry 20 years ago. So this is where the nonprofit newsrooms are simply not able to replace that ecosystem that used to exist.
Did you have a sense, though, whether they make the case that, you know, newspapers 25 years ago had a lot more overhead than some of these online-only nonprofit news outlets have? So, yes, maybe you're bringing in less money, but at the same time, your expenses are a lot different, and thus you might be more sustainable. Granted, it's just 1%. I don't think you're spending 1% of the costs, but I wonder about the sustainability considering the lower overhead.
Hey, really good point.
Yeah, that's a really interesting context. And that's one of the things we always try to get reporters to do is to put things in context. Don't just say there are 400 fewer newspapers or tell us how many there are and how much it's diminished. You need to put it in context. But this idea that, we're taking in less revenue, but it costs less to produce the content because we don't have to pay printers and we don't have to pay for paper and we don't have to pay for ink anymore. Certainly that's true, but it's a drop in the bucket.
It's a really good point. And I think one of the things that we ought to encourage our listeners to do is to support these nonprofit entities that are producing great content at lower costs, including, you know, nonprofit entities like the one that David Lombardo works for and the one that we're airing on here.
Or New York Focus, which does a great job with the issues that are impacted by state government. A lot of the coverage out of the Capitol is sort of breathless process stories. And New York Focus, which you're connected to, Rex, does not necessarily get hung up in a lot of that. They do have a politics reporter now, so maybe they'll do a little bit more of it. But it's always very substantive. And I am curious about the New York Focus model because I do get fundraising appeals from them. I know they have a development team. Do you have a sense of how sustainable they are?
Yes, I think they're very sustainable. They're very thoughtfully led. Mm-hmm. Interestingly, the publisher is actually trained as a journalist. But one of the things that does separate nonprofit newsrooms that I've seen, that I've worked on, and I'm on a couple of nonprofit boards, is that the in the for-profit model, leadership management tends to be a lot better remunerated than in the nonprofit sector. There is a huge gap, and we know this from corporate America, how many McDonald's workers it takes to match the salary of the one CEO of McDonald's, for example, was a scandal a couple of years ago. But that's true in the for-profit media ecosystem as well. Leaders are much better paid in a lot of the for-profit media world than in the nonprofits. And that is a thoughtful, intentional approach by these nonprofit organizations that I think they plan to sustain because I think that donors will demand it.
But I would argue the nonprofit model does not work on a small scale. You need the reach, or you need the geographic reach, or maybe the audience reach. Like in terms of the Adirondack Explorer, they have a big subject area to cover. A New York Focus has the whole state. But if you're talking about a small village or a town or even a county,
sure,
some of the rural counties aren't going to be able to do that nonprofit approach, or at least because they don't have the funder base to draw upon unless they can get some, you know, person from afar who really cares about the obscure topics that may arise in Steuben County.
Mm-hmm. So the numbers are just not there to sustain nonprofit reporting in the smaller communities, you're saying?
Correct. Yeah. Unless the expenses are so low that, you know, one little charity can cover the cost. I don't see that as the future for small local news. And we focus on local news a lot here and the importance of it. So it's pretty easy to do it for big state and national coverage, but local stories are a little harder to do this.
Let's just make note of the fact that we were talking about the merger involving WIOX and Roxbury, New York, and the Catskills. Since 2018, the station has been operating independently with an all-volunteer staff. And that is hard to sustain if you're trying to be a journalism organization. All-volunteer is all well and good until somebody decides they have to buy groceries, you know? It's the Media Project from Northeast Public Radio. If you're just tuning in, I'm Rex Smith here with Judy Patrick and David Lombardo, and we invite you to share your thoughts, media@wamc.org. We thank you for that. David, you were saying something interesting before we went on the air, and I just wanted you to bring it up.
Many interesting things.
There was something, I'm sure. What in the world did he do?
Now we've forgotten it.
You were talking about the notion of an interview where you interviewed somebody from an interest group, and you got really hauled over dragged over the coals by another outlet because you hadn't covered their point of view as well. Talk about that a bit.
Yeah, although I should say their bark is worse than their bite. At this point in my career, I kind of let the yelling and the emotions wash over me, and then I give them my sort of hopefully more reasoned and measured response. But yeah, we have a show that is not necessarily a collection of voices on any given issue. It's here's a lawmaker pushing an issue. Here's an advocacy group responding to a problem. And what I try to do is highlight maybe both sides of the issue in the course of that conversation. I try to play devil's advocate to speak, an issue that is a problem in my personal life as I antagonize people because I can't shut it off.
That is a journalistic tendency. Yeah. Every spouse will complain about that.
But the experience did make me wonder, how balanced should I try to be in any given episode or segment? Should, for example, in my show where there's four segments, should I try to have the opposing voice featured in another segment on that same episode? Or is it just enough for me to play devil's advocate? Or can I revisit that topic in a future episode, which is what we're actually going to do in this case? So it was definitely something I was thinking about and something I try to interrogate every time we do an interview because, it is easy to get swept up in a conversation, be like, yeah, this person does really sound right, or maybe not to be well-versed in what that person is talking about, so they're going to say things that go over your head, and you might miss that the counterpoints that the well-researched opposition might have thought of.
But that's what your show is, I think, and many of the issues you talk about are more nuanced than you can't do a yin and yang. If there's more than one opposing voice out there that you could draw in, and if you try to do that and balance it tit for tat, I think you're going to lose your audience. I've listened to your show I think you ask pretty good questions. I think that's the purpose of the questions, is to draw that out and then do it in a professional way that doesn't intimidate the person you're asking, and you can get have a real thoughtful conversation that you wouldn't get if it's an actual debate.
But what happens though when they're doing a topic where I'm not well versed in it? What happens when we're doing an energy topic or something on the environment, and I don't have Politico New York's Marie French whispering into my ear, David, that was nonsense. You need to call them out on that. Or if it's a healthcare issue that is something that I'm not totally comprehending all the sides of. So I do see that I'm not perfect. I am fallible, despite what I try to tell everybody. So I do think that I'm open to criticisms on it.
I think that's really, by the way, the great journalistic impulse is also to be open to criticism. It's a great thing. You do the kind of a thing that actually is done very well by Ezra Klein of the New York Times. That is a thoughtful conversation with someone, with a single person, usually at a time, on a topic at hand. And you have to ask the probing questions. The difference is that if you listen to the credits on the Ezra Klein show on NewYorkTimes.com, he's got 13 people who he's crediting along with his show.
We have 12.
and Ezra
just
Klein,
to be clear, one.
His show is usually like an hour and a half,
yeah,
too. Mm-hmm. He goes on and on.
Yeah, it does go on at some length. And so I think that you have to live, we all live with the resources we have at hand. And in the context of what you do, to try to do as many programs as you do, as thoughtfully as you do, it is a hard thing. And yes, we all also think of the questions that we might have asked.
Yes.
Oh, geez. That's a terrible thing. Last night I was lying awake remembering a conversation I had 55 years ago. Inconsequential, worrying that I should have responded better to something. And so you think about these things, the mistakes that you've made as a journalist, and you think, how will I ever recover from this?
Right. But the point to be made is you're not writing the definitive story, the definitive chapter. There's always another show the next day. There's another edition of the newspaper coming out. And kudos to you, Rex, for remembering something from 55 years ago.
I was going to say this is more of like some sort of end-of-life soul-searching. And I'm worried about this like Ebenezer Scrooge getting visited by people from 55 years ago.
I think it's a short-term memory that goes first.
Yeah. There we go. This is it, folks. This is the end of things. This is all we can do. And we, again, welcome your thoughts, people, about the effort to get... By the way, bear in mind that it's not balance that we are seeking in journalism. People often say, you know, your reporting is supposed to be fair and balanced. There's a two different things.
I think that's Fox, isn't that?
Fox. Yeah. They really do a great job of that, right? Fair is what you're trying to be. Insightful is what you're trying to be. Balance implies that there is always some happy mean in between this point of view and that point of view, and that's not where truth always lies. Your goal is to give people the truth, and you do as best you can in the amount of time and space. Seek the truth and report as fully as possible is the first tenet of the Code of Ethics, and so you do the best you can under the circumstances. And I think you do a great job, by the way. How do people
You can hear more right here on WAMC during the Midday Magazine program from 12:30 to 1.
Absolutely. Your program is divided up in Midday Magazine, right? You do a part of it here.
Yes, they get half the show. So if you're looking for even more David Lombardo content, visit capitalpressroom.org or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
There you go. How about that? Or you could always take up this great method that we found in this journalist down in Brooklyn, David Zirin, who has bought a bar. Now, there's an idea. There was a bar called Chilo's in Bed-Stuy that was closing, and David Zirin, who was the sports editor for The Nation, who knew The Nation had a sports editor, is now the owner of this thing. And I think there is something to be said for the role of journalists as the community conversation center. And maybe what we really need to be doing is finding a place where people can come together and be the sort of clearinghouse for community conversation and issues. What about that idea?
Yet another fad. What was it, like 15, 20 years ago, we were all having coffee shops.
Yeah.
Now we're doing bars. So I don't know how well the coffee shops worked. You know, I think dragging reporters away from their desks to go down and have conversations with people who rolled in off the street. Here I am. I'm such a curmudgeon, aren't I?
I mean, I like it in the context of an added perk or benefit or something for subscribers. But the idea of Johnny off the street who maybe not be paying for your content but just wants to give you some of their thoughts, I don't really love that. But anything that tries to create more of an ecosystem around the product you guys are selling, I think is helpful. If it ultimately, though, doesn't pay any dividends, then I think it's one of those things that you'd want to abandon quickly.
Yeah.
You know, I like the idea of media outlets having an office on the main street of a town. You know, in my experience, I spent a lot of years in those kinds of offices, and usually it was the same five or six people who would wander in and give me news tips. But I think it gives you visibility, and every once in a while you would get a normal person that would come in. So I'm not discounting the fact that that's valuable.
That was my experience growing up with the Saratogian in Saratoga Springs. It's right off of, well, it was right off of Broadway, and I'd go see my mom, who was the managing editor for many years and for my entire childhood, and people would come in off the streets just to either talk to the circulation department or maybe to speak to a reporter, and it was across the street from City Hall, so it was perfectly located. But now the idea of that much valuable resource dedicated to a newsroom and the printing press is a foreign concept, and that's why it's a brewery now where I got married last year.
Excellent. What a great place. When I was the editor of The Record in Troy in the early 90s, we were in this building that's now an apartment complex and had a very high ceiling and a marble floor on the first floor. There was a guy, and I was in the newsroom on the second floor, and I heard shortly after I became the editor this singing coming up, show tunes. And it turned out to be a gadfly who showed up at all the city council meetings, who was coming in, and he liked the acoustic of the record office. He liked the way that his voice sounded, and he would come in and sing show tunes. He had been injured in an industrial accident, and he was a little bit off. But he would make visits, and so I came down to welcome him, and it became kind of a regular thing. Show Tunes, as he came to be known to people, would show up and share his thoughts that he had shared with the city council the night before and sing a show tune with me. And then,
You join him? You can carry a tune, right, Rex?
Yeah. Well, I was in 16 of those legislative correspondence shows that you talk about, so I can do that.
Did he sing his comments, or did he sing regular songs?
No,
and then
he sang
his comments.
It's a good question. Clarifying. No, he sang his just regular show tunes and offered his commentary on the side. The stories, folks. It's all good. It's all part of the journalistic ecosystem, which seems to be the word of the day here. We're out of time for this week, and we hope you'll come back again to join us next week. David Lombardo from the Capitol Press Room here today. Judy Patrick, formerly the Daily Gazette. I'm Rex Smith, former editor of the Times Union. We are grateful to the producer of the Media Project, David Gustina. Thanks for joining us. Come back again next week for the Media Project.
Now, newspapermen are such interesting people. They used to work like hell just for romance. But finally, the movies notwithstanding, they all got tired of patches on their pants. They organized a union to get a living wage.
The Media Project is a national production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio. This week's projectors include former Times Union editor and current Upstate American Substack columnist Rex Smith, Judy Patrick, Vice President for Editorial Development for the New York Press Association and former editor of the Daily Gazette, and David Lombardo, host of the Capitol Press Room on WCNY. You can listen to the Media Project anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. I'm your producer, David Gustina. Thanks for listening.
Acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. Funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now, publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give three cheers for freedom of the press.